Do you ever get overwhelmed when your parent says, "My child is so picky"? Doesn't this always happen at the end of the well check when you think you're wrapping up? Do you get confused at where to even start? Because this topic is massive. And the last thing we want to do is further overwhelm or confuse our parents on navigating this topic. So for today's episode, we're going to be addressing picky eating and how you can navigate this with ease. Welcome back to the Exam Room Nutrition Podcast. I'm your host, Colleen Sloan. I'm a registered dietitian and pediatric PA. Each week, I'm giving you answers to common nutrition questions to help you become a more compassionate, confident clinician. You'll leave today with very practical suggestions that you can provide your parents with to increase the child's food exposure, to lessen their anxiety around trying new foods. We're going to go over a method called food chaining and solutions to managing the underweight picky eater. Make sure you stick around to the end for my nutrition notes section because I'll be giving you my top three favorite foods for adding calories to a child's diet. It is my absolute honor to introduce you to my guest today, Amber Rodinas. Amber is a registered pediatric and neonatal dietitian with over 7 years of experience. As a military spouse, she has worked clinically in hospitals all over the United States, and she's now working full-time in her own private practice called Little's Nutrition. Amber, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been really looking forward to this conversation today.
I love having pediatric dietitians on because I learn so much from you guys every time. So let's jump right into what are some reasons that the child is picky or refusing food altogether?
There's so many reasons why a kid could be picky. It could just be as simple as a normal growth and development. They're just developing preferences. They decide that they like the color orange today, and then tomorrow they hate orange. They're just kind of testing their own boundaries and limits. Another reason could be actual textural aversions. There's a huge spectrum of picky eating. So I kind of say there's some kids on one end that maybe just like different colors, or they like certain brands, or they like the packaging of food, all the way to the other end of the spectrum where we have kids maybe with autism and actual texture aversions that may require further treatments and therapies to help guide them in the right direction.
Yeah. And that's why this question is really overwhelming when parents come to us in a well check. And usually it's like at the end when we think we're wrapping up and they're like, "Oh, by the way, he's really picky. He only eats chicken nuggets. What do I do?" And there's a moment of kind of panic on the clinician's end because it's like, oh, this is such a big, heavy topic. I don't even know where to start. So what questions should a clinician be asking really to determine if this is just age-appropriate picky eating, like you had said, preferences of the day, or something more serious, food aversion or a feeding disorder? What questions could we ask to really get down to the details of that?
Yeah. So firstly, I would ask if your child is missing an entire food group. Are they not wanting to eat meat at this time? So they're missing an entire food group where there are key vitamins and other nutrients. Or is it they just like their cookies to be in the package, and if you dump them out, they don't eat them? Or does your child eat certain foods when they're at a friend's house or a grandparent's house, and then they just don't want them when they're at home in a different setting? Sometimes the setting of where these meals occur completely changes how a child will eat. And then on the other spectrum, the more severe spectrum, I would ask, are there texture aversion behaviors, maybe exhibiting gagging when they eat a certain food? And then depending on those answers, you kind of know which severity you're dealing with, and then you would go down very different paths, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why in my podcast every week, I always talk about the importance of asking further questions, because we are so trained to just give a treatment plan that you really can't do that with nutrition. You need to ask more questions to really see, okay, which avenue should I go down to give the appropriate recommendations? And I hear it all the time of like the three-year-old who eats great at grandma's or at daycare, she eats everything. And then at home with mom and dad, it's like she only wants the milk sippy cup or whatever. So that asking that in food environment and how the child eats differently in each environment is really a good point. So I'm glad you brought that up. All right, let's get into some practical tips now. And I love your page because you teach a concept called food chaining. And I would really love for you to explain what that is, because I think this is a really, really good method and something very actionable and pretty quick and easy that we can do in a well check. So give us the kind of 101 on food chaining and how do we teach our parents to use it?
All right. So I do love this topic, and I find that it helps picky eaters all the way from the less severe spectrum all the way to the end of the pretty severe spectrum. But it does especially help those kids that have specific texture preferences. So what food chaining is, it's actually a technique that is used in feeding therapies where you take a food that the child likes and accepts currently. You examine that food for what those characteristics are that the child likes about it. So is it smooth and creamy like a yogurt, or is it crunchy because they really like this certain cracker? What color is it? Is it salty? Is it sweet? You kind of take a look at all of these characteristics of the food. And then you link other similar characteristics of other foods until you reach an entirely new food. So what that might look like would be if your child really likes baby carrots, maybe that's the only vegetable that they eat at the moment. They like that it's orange, they like that it's crunchy, and there's a slight sweetness to it. So maybe the next link in that chain would just be slices of an orange bell pepper where it's raw and still crunchy, slightly sweet and orange. And you see how receptive they might be to that similar vegetable with those similar characteristics.
And then that can be brought down all the way to like a completely different food, correct? Because I've seen some pictures on Instagram of food chaining. So can you explain what that would look like if you take it from like, I don't know, a chicken nugget to like grilled chicken or something else, of how that would work all the way to the end?
Yeah. So one of my favorite food chains is because kids tend to love chicken nuggets, going from chicken nuggets all the way to fish. So you start with just a prepackaged breaded chicken nugget, and then the next link would maybe be a breaded fish stick. So it's a very processed fish, but it's so similar to chicken nuggets, some kids can't even tell that it's different. So then you take that breaded fish stick and then you link it to maybe a lightly battered fish fillet, and then slowly start removing that batter. And maybe next would be a fish tender, then all the way to baked fish or grilled fish.
I love this technique. And it could be as slow and as quick as the child accepts it, correct? What's the time frame in between each chain that you would recommend?
So what I encourage parents to do is not really move on to the next link until the previous link has been pretty well accepted. You can serve it and they eat it more frequently than not. Once they're comfortable with it, it doesn't feel overwhelming to them, move on to the next step. So an entire food chain, which can vary in length, you might be chaining two foods, or you might be chaining five foods to get to a new food. It can really depend. But it is a very slow process with weeks in between links. So, I mean, in total, it could be weeks to months for an entire food chain to be completed.
Yeah, and I'm glad you went over that because, you know, it's important to set up the expectation for this method, because when people's minds are like, okay, today we did fish nuggets, tomorrow we're going to do baked fish. And it doesn't always work like that. And then parents, if they don't know that, they're going to get really frustrated and say it didn't work. And then they're just going to serve the chicken nuggets because they know the kid will eat. And really, that's where parents get stuck, is they get really frustrated in the process because it does take a long time. So I always remind parents, like, feeding is a marathon. You're feeding your kids for 18 plus years. And it's okay if it takes them 3 months to try a different brand of chicken nugget. That's okay. So I think that expectation is really, really important. Regarding food chaining, is it important to only do one change at a time, or is it okay to do like multiple different changes?
I would recommend just one at a time, and partly because kids that are truly picky eaters and may get overwhelmed easily with things like textures or new colors and new flavors, it can be really overwhelming to do more than one change at a time. It's a long game. Just focus on that one food and see how that one goes. And your child may surprise you. You may be able to go more quickly. They were super receptive to this one food, but maybe the next food chain wouldn't be as quick. So you really have to take it at your own child's pace.
Yeah. You had mentioned that it's overwhelming for kids, and it is. They're little people, right? They feel anxiety. They get really scared. They get nervous. Kids and adults don't really like change, right? It's difficult. And food is kind of the only thing that they sometimes feel like they can control. So what are some non-food approaches that we can educate our parents on trying just to help relieve the anxiety around food and around meals?
Yes. So I like to focus a lot on food exposures in my practice. And what that sounds like to a lot of people is, oh, my child must try this food 20 times. I know everyone has heard that common misconception that it could take 20 food exposures or more for your child to accept a new food. And we think, oh, they must taste it 20 times. And that's not necessarily true. A food exposure can start way before the food is sitting in front of them at the table with the expectation to eat it. We recommend reading books about the foods. At least with my kids, I read a book every night before bed. And sometimes we read books about food, and there are some really great books by other pediatric dietitians that I typically recommend. There's one really great one called Where Does Broccoli Come From? And it's all about food, and each page will focus on a certain fruit or vegetable. The cutest thing, and kids love it, and they just get to learn about it and never have to eat that food right then and there. Another thing is just meal planning. Whenever parents are coming up with their grocery lists, I like to recommend, ask for your child's input. I do recommend parents deciding on a couple of different options for the child and then presenting those options and then letting their child weigh in on their preferences. So you're not necessarily catering to them. You're providing them with the options you chose. Would you rather have hamburgers this night or baked chicken? And then the child could give that input. Then once you're at the grocery store and you have bell peppers on the list, I would recommend that you ask the child to pick out their favorite color bell pepper. Let them in on that experience. Let them touch the food. They can smell it. And then once you're home with those foods, letting them actually help in the meal preparation process. It may not look like them actually chopping the vegetables, but maybe you chopped them as the parent, and then the child would pick them up and place them on the baking sheet or in a bowl or whatever you're doing with it. So really simple tasks. None of them involve actually eating, but they've been exposed to the food several times at that point. So when they see that food on their plate, they are not shocked and overwhelmed, and it's not a whole brand new thing to them.
I'm so passionate about this topic, so we're going to linger here a little bit because I just think this is so important for so many reasons, not just for the littles, for picky eaters. So for my pediatricians and families that are listening, this is so important for the older kids too, because whether they're picky or not, now you're teaching them life skills. So I have a 13-year-old daughter, and she comes grocery shopping with me begrudgingly. She does not want to go anytime, but she comes with me and I ask her that specific question. Would you rather have broccoli or cauliflower? We're having chicken and rice. Do you want broccoli or cauliflower? Because I find that if I ask her, what do you want for dinner? She sometimes either just doesn't know, or that's just like an overwhelming question to ask a kid, like a blanket, what do you want? So if you give them an option of two, it's a win either way. She's choosing a vegetable either way. It's also teaching her the skill of grocery shopping, right? At some point, our kids are going to move out of our house and they need to know somewhat of how to grocery shop, how to look at a list, go and find the things, shop prices. It's so many skills within just grocery shopping that you can involve the little kids and your teenagers. I literally give her half my list and say, hey, go get this stuff. Come back to me. And we have Publix down in South Florida. So if it's buy one, get one, pick that over the other brand, right? So like, it's so many skills. And I think this is such an important skill for parents to do, whether you got little kids or big kids. And then the little kids, like you had mentioned, get them involved in the kitchen too. It's pretty easy to give them little tasks. I'm a busy working mom, so I understand sometimes it's like, oh, I could do it so much faster than you. And it doesn't have to be every meal, but green beans, they can wash them under the faucet. They can lay them out on the cutting board for you. Or there are so many kids safe scissors and kitchen utensils that you can use. And then the older kids, they can start learning how to cook. Again, another life skill. So I talk about this so much with my parents because it's kind of forgotten. We forget once they're like 10 or 11 and they're eating okay, we kind of forget like, oh yeah, we have like life skills now that we have to teach them. So anyway, I could talk about this forever and ever, but let's talk a little bit now too about the meal setting, the actual dinner table. What's going on there? How do we introduce new foods? How do we just decrease the pressure once we're all sitting at the table and the food prep, the exposures are done? How do we kind of relieve some anxiety just around the whole dinner time?
Yeah, good question. So like I said, hopefully by that point, the foods that are on their plate, they are at least a little bit familiar with. They maybe have seen them. They maybe touched them, smelled them already, maybe even tasted it. Because by the way, during that meal prepping process, kids are way more likely to just randomly want to try those new foods than they ever will be once they're sitting at the table with it in front of them. So that's a whole other side note. But yeah, so once you're at the table, recommend keeping it distraction free, not in like a very like, just look at your plate and eat your food right now, but you know, no toys, no phones, tablets, TVs off, all of that. I do recommend you could always turn on a little bit of like light music or something if you need that noise in the background, but nothing that they can visually see, just so that they can focus a little bit more on what's in front of them. But then making mealtime a little bit more fun. So if you're struggling to keep your kids interested in the food in front of them, I recommend bright, colorful plates. They have all kinds of really fun little like construction plates on Amazon where the utensils are like a bulldozer or something. And you can just kind of bring a little bit of food play into it. Fun cups with straws, placemats. I actually ran a group program in the past where parents had really good luck with, first of all, changing up the kids' seat. They were tired of sitting in the same spot at dinner. All they did was let the child choose a different seat that night. They said, sit wherever you want. And then they were so into their meal. They were like happy as a clam. And then they also purchased new placemats for them. And sometimes they have little games on there where you can use your fruits and vegetables to like move around on the board, all kinds of things like that. I actually recently just saw a reel where there was a little electric train on serving the foods around the dinner table. So just, I mean, get creative and bring some fun to it. It should not be an all-out battle at mealtime. Let them play a little bit, keep it lighthearted. And actually, I don't recommend the whole like bribing. I don't use dessert to bribe them to keep eating, but kind of give them that freedom to try as they want. And if they choose not to, sometimes you just have to move on and try again, because even that food just sitting in front of them is a food exposure, whether they eat it or not.
Yeah, I agree. And sometimes that's as much as some kids can handle, is literally just having it in their vicinity. So I love those exposures. And I think that is so fun. And, you know, adults were like boring old, like fuddy-duddies. We forget that food is an experience. That's why we really do enjoy going out to dinner. It's an experience with our loved ones. And kids, it's the same thing. It's just in a younger way. And so I love bringing fun to the mealtimes. Another thing that I like to talk about when we're all at the dinner table, I love that you brought up, don't bribe them. I tell parents, especially if it's something brand new that they've never eaten before, put it on the table and almost ignore it. Don't say, eat this, try this, literally act like it's not even there. And after a few times, the next time I will say, let them play with it. Because I don't know about you, but growing up, like that was like, don't play with your food. That was like constant. Every meal was like, don't play with your food. And I think our generation of parents now, we still are like, oh, maybe they can't play with their food because they're not going to eat it. But honestly, I think food play is the number one way to get kids to try the food, because like you said, it's another exposure. So some of the ways that I like to have parents suggest that they play with the food is literally just asking them about the food. What color is it? What shape is it? Do you think it's crunchy or soft? What does it smell like? What are some other ways that you encourage families to recommend that they like play, quote unquote, with their food?
Yeah, the funniest little things, like imitating like a bunny rabbit. So this one was really fun with my kids when they were really little. We would have salad and we would just munch on the lettuce together and pretend that we were bunny rabbits. And oh my gosh, they finished all of their salad without even a thought. And it was really cute and really fun. And they realized that the lettuce wasn't scary at all. So I really encourage just using your imagination like that.
That is so cute. I'm totally stealing that because how fun, right? I mean,
yes.
And kids are really easy to distract, right? So it's not like we're trying to trick them or fool them. But again, we're taking the pressure off like, hey, here's a salad, eat that. They're not going to want to do that. But if you're like, hey, here's a salad today, we're going to pretend that we're bunnies. How fun is that? Now that's like a little game, like who can be the silliest bunny? So I love that. Totally stealing that. All right, let's transition a little bit into a specific population of kids that are picky, but kind of as a result are also underweight. This is so common and a huge, huge concern for parents. They want their kid to grow. They're really worried about their number on the growth chart. Mm-hmm. And they're coming to us saying, hey, they literally only eat chicken nuggets and they're underweight. What are some tips that the clinician can suggest to help the underweight picky kiddo?
Yeah. So for those kids that are actually struggling with weight gain, which first of all, I know a lot of parents come in and they are really concerned with the numbers. They get really their minds wrapped around they have to be hitting this specific number, or there's that misconception that kids should be at the 50th percentile on the growth chart. And so just to address that point real quick is kids will follow their own growth chart. They don't need to be at the 50th percentile, but what we want to look for is, are they following their specific growth chart? We want to see trends that if they're at the 20th percentile, they're still at the 20th percentile as they gain weight. Because as we all know, bodies are not the same shape and size, and genetics play a role into that. However, if a child comes in and they are falling from their percentiles, they're actually losing weight or they're just not growing appropriately for their curve, then we step in with a little bit more nutrition boost type things to actually start moving the needle a little bit. So I recommend adding extra fat and protein where we can. So if they like peanut butter or don't have any allergies to peanut butter, some kids will just eat spoons of peanut butter. But I say add that to whatever fruit they're eating. If they're eating apples, give them a side of peanut butter. Let's boost up the protein and fats for them. Adding extra butter, if you made them their favorite mac and cheese, right before you serve it, stirring in an extra tablespoon of butter can help boost the calories for them. And a lot of families have good luck with making smoothies and things like that. Beverages tend to be a big hit with a lot of kids. So if your kid accepts a smoothie, then that's like a game changer, because you can add extra fat, extra protein, add in that whole fat Greek yogurt and stuff like that. You can really boost up the smoothies to get in some extra calories that way.
That's exactly what I recommend too, especially like the melted butter trick, because it's very hard for underweight picky kids to eat more volume, right? If we need more calories to gain weight, they can't eat more volume, right? Their little tummies are full, or they're just struggling with that in general. So just increasing their portion size is not going to get them to gain some weight. So I always tell my parents to focus on fat, and it's either melted butter, a little drizzle of whatever cooking oil. And that can be done so easily in pretty much all the foods that kids eat, especially at dinner time, because it's already kind of like moist and warm. So I love those tips. That's really, really good.
In addition to the smoothies, I know sometimes clinicians, coming from a very clinical background, we use nutrition supplements a lot too, things like Pediasure and Boost and all those types of things. And those are okay in some instances, but I would actually recommend putting those into the smoothie as well, so you get a bigger nutrition boost. I like mixing those in with other whole foods rather than just giving them more of just a chocolate milk drink. However, some kids just require a chocolate milk drink because they won't take anything else. So at that point, if your child is struggling to grow, you just have to do whatever they will take at that point. So it might be some trial and error with that.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad you brought that up, because even literally just yesterday, I had an underweight kid. He's actually fallen 2 percentiles and he's somewhat picky. And we talked a lot about non-food things first, like feeding environment. The older brother got to get down from the table and he was kind of left there eating alone. So all those little things came into play. And then they asked me about Pediasure or Boost and what I recommend. And I'm on the same page with you. I don't automatically just say, yeah, give it to them. That's going to solve all the problems. Because if the core problem is he's a picky eater, us just throwing a chocolate milkshake, essentially that's what it is to him. He's going to love it. But now he's just drinking his calories. He's not learning to eat any new food. So I'd love to hear your thoughts a little bit. Let's linger a little bit on these nutritional shakes. And besides adding it into milkshakes, what's your opinion on that when parents ask us, should we do this? Especially if it's a child who we think there are some other methods that would work better.
Yeah. So like you said, it's not my first go-to. But if we are using it for the reason of the child is losing weight or not gaining weight, then I kind of put some stipulations around it. I want to make sure that they're drinking them at the appropriate times, not with the meal, because that fills them up and then they can't try the new foods. And again, you're not focusing on solving the root problem. Having them at snack time would be okay, but making sure that that's 2 to 3 hours between meal times to give them time to get hungry again. So I put those kind of stipulations in place, and then maximizing the other whole foods. I always say food first, and then I would give them just generally one step to focus on first. We discussed it and we think maybe just focusing on food exposures for a couple of weeks, the pressure-free type of food exposures, just for a couple of weeks, kind of lay off of them and see what happens, see if they kind of come out of their shell a little bit. And before moving on to anything else, I think giving parents a laundry list of too many things to do at once overwhelms the parent and then also overwhelms the child because they're just trying to throw things and see what sticks. I do it in a little bit more of a systematic approach. Start with real basic things at the beginning and then move on.
I love that. And I'm so glad you brought that up because I think that is like the most important thing that we've talked about today is really give them one thing at a time to do. Because yeah, we talked about a lot of different techniques and strategies today. But if you as the clinician tell them all the things you're going to food chain and you're going to help them, have them help you grocery shop and cook in the kitchen and you're going to take away their Pediasure and you're going to make them, right? Like that is a lot of change at one time. That's overwhelming for anybody. So I think that is the best takeaway for clinicians listening is, hey, choose one. Let's tell the parents, hey, you know what? Let's work on eating together 5 nights out of the week and get some new fun placemats. And let's just see if that alone helps. Come back and see me in 2-3 weeks and let's try the next thing. I think that is really, really golden. So I'm super glad you brought that up. So I would love your kind of worst advice or worst things to say that clinicians need to stop saying altogether, whether it be about a picky eater or maybe to an underweight child.
Yeah. So I have 2 points. For the general picky eater, I don't actually like to label them as a picky eater. They hear that and they're like, well, I'm a picky eater. And then they identify with that. They kind of take it to heart. And then with the underweight child, I don't actually like to say this child needs to gain weight. I would rephrase it more like we want to optimize nutrition to promote growth and development and keep the weight out of it. And as working as a clinical dietitian for many years and in so many different children's hospitals, I did see eating disorders in really young children in every single one of the hospitals that I've ever worked with. And it's a very real problem and it's a very scary and heartbreaking problem. And so I think even if they're a toddler in the room, just being aware of the words we're using around weight, making sure they don't feel shame around it and kind of refocusing on just making sure our bodies are healthy and developing properly versus we need to hit a certain number and then kind of obsessing over this number. That's just not a good way to start and can really snowball as they get older.
This is so powerful, Amber. Literally everything you say, I'm like nodding in complete agreement with you because so many of the things that you've said is so, so important. I'm so grateful that you spent this time with me to just give us these powerful recommendations that I know this will completely change the trajectory of our patients' lives. So thank you again, Amber, for being with us. I'm so grateful for you. I'd really love to have you back on again.
Oh, I will come back anytime. This was so wonderful. Thanks so much, Colleen.
All right, guys, now it's time for my nutrition notes. So today I wanted to leave you with three suggestions for foods that are high in calories if you've got an underweight child that you're really trying to help them gain weight. My favorite top strategy is actually what Amber had suggested, and that is adding fat to their meals. So using butter or oil is a really, really good and easy way that you can add some extra calories quickly, simply, and without adding volume to what the child is already eating. So that is the number one go-to that I use. But if the parents are already doing that, or if you're trying to add a little bit more calories kind of throughout the day, these three foods are the ones that I would recommend. Number one is avocado. Avocado is a great one because it's smooth and creamy. It can be easily blended into a smoothie. You don't really need any measurements, but you can spoonful a little bit into a smoothie. It can be easily mixed into sauces or casseroles, and it doesn't really change the flavor component at all to that meal. If the child accepts avocado, some kids actually like it. You can use avocado as like a little avocado spread on toast. Or if they are brand new to trying avocado, you can put a very teeny tiny amount and then make like a grilled cheese sandwich. Because again, you're exposing them to a new food and a new flavor, but in a very, very small amount. My next favorite high calorie food is actually half and half. Now stay with me. This can be used to replace milk in recipes. For example, like macaroni and cheese. I think there's like a quarter cup of milk that it usually calls for. You can actually use half and half to do this. Makes it taste really, really good. You can use it as well to make smoothies too. Because again, it's just higher in fat. It's really smooth and creamy. The next and final food that I always recommend for my parents, and this is of course if they don't have any food allergies, but it's Nutella. Children love Nutella because it's chocolatey and it's sweet, got a little hazelnut flavor to it, and it's a really easy way to incorporate into meals and snacks as well too. So I love to make banana sandwiches with Nutella. You can either do it with two pieces of regular bread, or you can spread some Nutella on like a flour tortilla. Line up a few cut pieces of banana and roll it up and then cut that into little pieces. And it's a really fun lunch meal or snack. The other way I like to use Nutella is on pancakes or on waffles as like a little spread for the top of it. And then another great way to use Nutella as a snack is to just dip it with different fruits or even pretzels. Kids really, really like Nutella. So this is a really good thing to add in to the foods that they're already eating to add some extra calories. So I hope those were some useful suggestions for you. The next time you've got an underweight kiddo, try suggesting one of those three foods that they can start incorporating into their day. Thank you guys so much for being with me. I know you have so many options when listening and learning on podcasts and on YouTube. So I'm just honored that you would choose to spend the time with me. It's my joy to discuss nutrition with you every week. So as always, let's continue to make our patients healthier, one exam room at a time. And I'll see you next time.